You're listening to SBS On The Money with Ricardo Gonçalves.
Hi everyone, welcome to the SBS On The Money podcast for this Wednesday, the 12th of November 2025. It's a day where the Australian share market fell 0.2%, most of the selling happening in the afternoon. We'll have the details with James Gerrish from Market Partners in a few moments. But first, falling borrowing costs and low vacancy rates are attracting investors to the housing market. The Bureau of Stats says the number of new investment loans written in the September quarter rose by 13.6% to almost 58,000, and that is a record high. Now, while owner-occupier loans, while they're greater, they're growing at a slower pace. And economists say more of those kinds of buyers are needed to meet the government's housing supply targets. To discuss that, I spoke with Marie Kilroy, a lead economist at Oxford Economics. Marie, so investment loans are at a record high, both in terms of number and value. What kind of a role are investors playing at the moment in the housing market?
Yes, we saw really strong growth in investors in the latest ABS lending indicators data. Investors, the majority of them are going to the established property market, so they're buying existing dwellings, but they are playing an increasing role in the new detached housing market, so you're off the plan, greenfield fringe, but that's probably them diverting away from that off the plan, which they were a big driver in the last apartment upturn. We are going to have an apartment upturn. We're at the early stages of that upturn. So we would expect them to come back into the off the plan market, but at the moment they're not really participating as much as they once did.
So in terms of, are they funding the right times of homes to be built to aid supply, will it help then to meet the government's target at all of building 1.2 million homes in about 5 years?
Really need owner occupiers, so your first home buyers, your upgraders, downsizers, to go into new builds, so off the plan, and the house and land packages. It can't just be investors that are driving it, because they're typically going to go into established dwellings. So it sort of needs to come from all demand channels to meet those targets.
What about in the way it's being flown through to home prices, right? Because, you know, average loan sizes, according to the data today, are at a record as well. And this is ahead of the government's 5% deposit scheme. What does it mean then for first home buyers?
So anecdotally, there's been a really strong uptake of that 5% deposit scheme from the federal government. That actually doesn't change a first home buyer's borrowing capacity. So that's still, for the banks to decide. But they will likely take out larger loans. The loan to value ratio will increase for first home buyers. But at the aggregate level, we might actually see a bit of a dampener on the average loan size because of the compositional change, because first home buyers typically take out smaller loans. They're going for that lower value property. So compositionally it might change, but for first home buyers, it likely sees that their average loan size will increase.
So what I got out of this is that investors are typically buying existing dwellings and not necessarily buying off the plan, so creating the apartments that we need for supply. You were saying that we need those first home buyers and owner occupiers to actually buy or instigate builds of new property to aid that supply, but prices are going up. So how do we fix it?
Well, it's been, a problem that's been developing for, if not decades, that we're in the situation we're in now because of decades-long affordability issues. Unfortunately, there's no quick fix. I wish I had the key to unlock it all, but no, there is positives coming through. So the New South Wales and South Australia government, they have an off-the-plan pre-commitment policy that is helping off-the-plan apartments, because arguably they are the dwelling type that we need to meet any of those targets. We don't expect that at a national level the Accord targets will get met, but some states are better positioned to meet their own targets than others.
And just finally, what does the lending data say about the attractiveness of renovations, especially at a time, though, when building material costs are relatively still high?
The relationship with renovations and particularly house prices is pretty strong. So when you get house price growth and you get property turnover, usually you get renovations. People renovate when they're either bought a new dwelling or they're about to sell. So we would expect renovation activity to pick up, but there is definitely a constraint on the ability to do work and start work. But that's also not just on the build cost side, it's also on the labour side. Skills shortage that we have for construction is probably the biggest hurdle that that renovation activity is going to face in the housing upturn.
That's Marie Kilroy there from Oxford Economics. Let's take a look at the Australian share market now, which did fall. The S&P ASX 200 down by 0.2% to 8,799. Information technology, the worst performing sector, followed by consumer discretionary, the likes of energy, consumer staples and materials doing well. The best performer today, mineral resources, up by around about 9%, followed by Liontown Resources. So a couple of those lithium players. The worst performers include Zip, the buy now, pay later company, down by around 5.5%. Gaming firm Aristocrat Leisure off by about 7.5%. The worst performer, one of those tech stocks, Life360, down 13%. For more on the day's market action, I spoke with James Gerrish from Market Partners. James, first of all, what's driving share market sentiment at the moment, and how much of it has to do with the prospect of an end to that US government shutdown?
Yeah, Ricardo, I think, you know, if I look at markets, we're less than 1% off all-time highs for the US. We're about 3% off all-time highs here locally. So sentiment is good. Some of that will be related to improving news flow coming out of the US. But ultimately, I think it comes back to, you know, the old fundamentals in terms of earnings. US quarterly earnings have been strong. The company updates that we've seen locally have been, by and large, pretty solid. We had FedEx out overnight, which is often seen as a bellwether of broader economic growth over in the US. They upgraded their earnings. So overall, I think, you know, sentiment plays a big part, but at the moment, you know, it's pretty bullish.
How's all this being played out on the share market, especially locally, because we're seeing that gold price rise again?
Yeah, well, equities have, as I just alluded to, equities have remained pretty resilient. The gold price in itself has had some, I guess, a bit more volatility in the last few weeks. Obviously, we had a huge run up to above $4,100 US an ounce. And that was a very universally owned trade. Everyone seemed to be bullish on gold, bearish on the US dollar. And I think, you know, trades like that have a tendency to unwind and unwind pretty quickly. We saw week longs get washed out of the gold trade, gold quickly pulled back a couple of $100. But it's now, you know, it's now recovering very strongly again. So some of these gold miners have, pulled back 10, 15, 20% from their highs. Presented good buying opportunities and then now going back and retesting those highs. So I think the gold trade still looks good by and large. I think the overarching thematic around, US dollar debasement, the US dollar is likely to go lower over time. And I think that's really supportive of gold and gold miners here locally.
So that's the gold trade. What about the tech or AI trade? I think there's been a sharp sell down in tech stocks overnight. A lot of it, I guess, had to do more recently about this fear that interest rates in the US may not fall as fast as we first thought. There's also this talk about AI being really overvalued. What's your take? Is it an area you're still looking at?
Yeah, I think it's really dangerous from an investor standpoint. I've heard that continually around the overvaluation of the AI trade. I think it's really dangerous just to buy into that sort of high-level rhetoric. I think there's probably pockets of overvaluation in that area of the market. There always is. There's always pockets in some areas that are overvalued where other companies are screening on the cheaper side. I mean, the catalyst last night was a large investor sold a big stake in NVIDIA, more to diversify their exposure into other areas of AI. If I think about, you know, whether or not they're overvalued or not, NVIDIA is growing earnings at 40 to 50% a year. They're trading on circa 40 times earnings. If you look out a couple of years, NVIDIA is coming back and trading circa 25 times earnings on, you know, consensus numbers. If I look at something like a CBA, it's trading on 27 times earnings. They came out with a quarterly update yesterday. You know, they're growing earnings at low single digits. So if you extrapolate out a couple of years, then CBA is still trading on 25 times earnings. So depends on your time frame and from an investment standpoint. I'm not saying that the AI trade won't have periods where volatility gets extended and there gets worries about overvaluation, et cetera. And you've got to be selective in the space. But I think the growth metrics in that area of the market, I don't think it's a 1, 2, 3 year phenomenon. I think it's going to be going for a lot longer than that. And these big companies are really starting to see the fruits of that in strongly growing earnings. And I think that's the main thing that drives share prices over time.
You mentioned CBA. I wouldn't mind focusing on the banks just for a moment because they're such a large part of the market here. Shares in the bank continuing to fall after yesterday's $2.6 billion quarterly cash earnings update. The sector's mixed though. What's your take?
Yeah, I think, I think pretty clearly it's just a casualty of its own success. I mean, last year CBA was unstoppable. It obviously traded up to all-time highs, became massively expensive. There's a whole bunch of reasons around that, probably predicated a lot on index flows. So CBA still, as I said before, is trading 27 times earnings. It's expensive. You've then got others in the sector that have got some, building tailwinds that are more self-help. So ANZ's obviously got a massive turnaround underway under the guidance of a new CEO. Westpac's putting through some meaningful tech upgrades across their operations, reuniting three banking brands into one sort of tech stack. Whereas NAB, on the other hand, is probably losing some of its dominance in the business banking side. So if I was to characterise the banks, am I better off paying? Getting ANZ for 10 p points cheaper than CBA, and ANZ's got more of a runway to help itself coming out of a very tough few years where management dropped the ball on multiple issues. So for me, I think the banks are probably a tale of two halves. I think ANZ and Westpac are the ones that have got more upside from here relative to CBA that got excessively overvalued and probably still is there today. And then NAB, which is losing some of its prominence in its main driver, which is business banking. So to me, I think the clear standout is probably ANZ followed by Westpac.
Is there any other company news that you're keeping an eye on today?
Yeah, we had some interesting news out of Mineral Resources this morning. They're a iron ore, lithium mining services company. They've had a very, very challenging last 12 months, but they've announced today the sale of 30% of their operating lithium assets, $760-odd million, about 1.2 billion Aussie, which will alleviate some of the balance sheet stress they've got. They're carrying about $5.4 billion worth of debt, so they'll use that money to pay down debt. And they'll also, the read-through of the sale price for those assets is really encouraging. So, we had their lithium assets pegged at, worth circa $2.7 billion. This transaction implies they're worth about $3.9. So that stock is up 7, 8% today, trading at just shy of $52. To give you some context, in April it was trading at $14. So they've been in a world of pain, but they're now seeing a very strong recovery, both operationally and also in terms of their share price. So that's probably the main point of news today, Ricardo.
And then just wrapping up, what are you telling your clients right now and where do you see the opportunities?
Yeah, I think the same message applies when we talk to clients is around consistency in an approach, buying good quality assets, and then we've got an active management bias around our portfolios and sticking with that. I think we've seen it in the last 6 months in particular around very significant divergence around sectors that are performing well with tailwinds and those sectors that haven't performed well with headwinds. So it's really trying to pick those sectors that have got tailwinds. Mineral resources in the lithium space, I think that's got some tailwinds. We're a little bit less positive on the banking space overall, but we like ANZ. I think the material stocks have got some real tailwinds, particularly in the energy side at the moment. Obviously, we just spoke about AI being a multi-decade phenomenon. That's going to require a lot of energy. I think there's some really interesting plays in the energy sector. So eyes up, investing is always what I'm preaching to clients, but sticking with the plan that we put together for them and consistently managing their portfolio, that's where you'll get the best outcomes, Ricardo.
That is James Gerrish there from Market Partners, and he wraps up the share part, the podcast. That's what I'm doing right now, the podcast for this Wednesday. Don't forget, if you enjoy, give it a rating or review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. and I'll get back to putting together the finance segment for SBS World News.
This SBS On The Money podcast is provided for informational purposes only. The content on this podcast should not be understood as constituting advice or a recommendation. It is not personal advice and does not consider your personal circumstances or objectives. You should contact a licensed professional before making any financial decision.